It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, presented as always by our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999. If you have a need for roofing, siding, garage, windows, contact Exterior Home Solutions today at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. I'm Eric Kane with Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, and Austin Price. Got a lot of questions to get into, so we'll start with Bassmaster Vol. How aggressive will Tennessee be in the transfer portal, Austin?
I would guess aggressive in, at some positions, not aggressive at others that maybe fans think they should be. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, they're not going to be as aggressive as maybe in years past. They'll be more kind of selective. And right now, it just doesn't feel like they got much traction going on out there at all. I mean, they've talked to a few kids here and there. Most of it's just kind of exploratory, but nothing like, you know, deep down. I think they'll have a visitor or two between now and when they go to Columbus, Ohio. And, you know, this is, you know, something where I think, you know, it just depends on the kid, the position, and kind of if those two parties can come to a mutual agreement.
Well, and also, I mean, interior offensive lineman.
Yes.
I think you're always looking at a defensive lineman. I think you always explore that part. Outside of that, we'll see what their needs ultimately end up being, right? I mean, it's like everybody sees a tight end go in the portal, like the kid from USC, and it's like, got to have – it's like you have five scholarship tight ends on your roster next year. It's not a position of need in the portal. I mean, Tennessee's at a point where it's very much need-based and not numbers-based, whereas 3 or 4 years ago it was numbers-based to build your roster because they had needs all over the place.
Yeah.
They're much more selective now because it's a much more need-based – limited deal that they don't have a need at every position out there. So just because a high profile guy goes in doesn't mean that they're going to be at the top of the of list because Tennessee, it's like a running back. I mean, Tennessee's got some running backs right now, you know, I mean, we'll see what the portal yields or doesn't yield in terms of movement moving forward. But I mean, right now Tennessee's slated to bring what five running backs on the roster next year.
Yeah. And for all fans, stop looking at what they were ranked in high school. Look at what they've done. If a kid was a four-star, let's use as a non-Tennessee guy, for example, Walker Howard, the former four-star. He's a top three or four quarterback in the class of 2022, the year that Ty Simpson came out. Went to LSU, then transferred from there to Ole Miss, and now he's going to Louisiana. But because he's a former four-star, people are like, oh, got to go get him. You know, same thing with a lot of these players that Hubs is referencing. And see what they've done. Have they caught 40 or 50 balls? If they've caught 40 or 50 balls or thrown 20 touchdowns or rushed for 800 yards, then they validate their worth and they've validated their ranking. But if they've not done anything, if they've not played and they're a former four-star offensive lineman and they're in year three, maybe they're just not any good. So, like, you know, that's not a black and white because sometimes kids just need a change of scenery, right? Look at Miles Kitzelman. He couldn't get on the field at Alabama. He comes here. He's been Tennessee's best tight end. But – that's, you know, more the exception, not the rule. So I think just look at what they've done. Want players that have done stuff on the field.
Isn't this where you want to be as a program, though? I mean, don't you guys think where you're looking to add, you know, 6 to 8 guys to your roster every year instead of 12 or 15? I mean, you're saying, you're cherry picking it, you know, to augment positions, not to find 4 or 5 starters.
And yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Well, I would just say also, I mean, I think coaches also, I mean, you know, some fans think it, but I think a lot of coaches put a lot of stress on their culture and development. And I mean, you don't want to, you know, bring in 12 upperclassmen every year to try to indoctrinate. I mean, you know, maybe if you try to find a dozen of the right guys, true. But I mean, I think culture and development get overlooked in this deal a lot. Just from, like what AP's talking about, they see somebody sees a former 5-star in the portal and, you know, you got to have him.
I do want to ask about one, and again, AP, you said they talked to some guys, more exploratory than anything. Have you heard anything about that South Alabama running back? I saw him on social media, really productive player as a true freshman. And again, it's one of those positions where it's like you don't have to have a running back, but maybe if one makes sense. I just saw his name go in the portal. I'm like, that's a really productive guy. I'm kind of intrigued to see if Tennessee would even kind of look there.
Yeah, I mean, again, has a staffer behind the scenes, you know, reached out once the kid went in the portal just to kind of see where he's at and what he's looking for? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Tennessee's reached out to multiple players just to see what they're looking for. And if a kid goes, I don't want $500,000, and Tennessee doesn't pay that position at that rate, then, you know, it's like, okay, appreciate you. Good luck with everything. Click. Yeah. You know, I mean, so I mean, like, you know, with South Alabama running back, I think it boils down to, does Cam Seldon leave? If Cam Seldon's back and you have, and let's say, just, you know, you lose Dylan Sampson like everybody expects. If it's Deshaun Bishop, Peyton Lewis, Cam Seldon, and then the two freshmen, do you need more than that? You only really played two this past year outside of just when guys were hurt and you had to kind of spell a little bit. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, I just don't see them going that route if they can avoid it. But, again, I think a lot of that's subject to change. I think wide receiver subject to change. I think safety subject to change. All depending on who comes and who goes.
Kind of on that note, and I know we got to move on here, but you've seen two go in the portal wide receiver. Does that mean Tennessee should go get a wide receiver? I mean, minus two, plus one?
That's kind of how I feel, but I'm not sure they feel that way, just based off the fact they got, you know, if everybody comes back, Brazel, Mike Matthews, obviously Squirrel White, you have Braylon Staley, and then, you know, you have a several, you know, freshmen that you like coming in. So, I mean, I don't think you have to go that route. But, you know, what does it look like in spring? You know, now that they still have the spring window, like what do you feel like coming out of the bowl game? You know, where do you feel like some of these guys are? I think a lot of it depends on, you know, if somebody leaves again, you know, that could change, you know, how they view it.
I think the other thing too is the wide receiver position is a really interesting position in the portal. I mean, how many guys have moved on to greener pastures, and it's really been, they've really thrived in their new location. Okay. I mean, Dante Thornton's been, he was better in year two here than he was in year one. Chris Brazel has not been what we thought he would be. Dominic Lovett left Missouri, who I thought was a really good player. He's been not nearly as productive at Georgia as he was at Missouri. Isaiah Bond, I would say, has been okay at Texas. Where is he? I mean, and there's about 600 wide receivers in the transfer portal right now. It's the most transient position out there. Guys are moving all the time at that one. I think that's the hardest one to evaluate. It seems to be one of the hardest ones to evaluate in the portal.
Let's move on here to Davey Vall. How would you attack Ohio State defensively? Rob, if you were Josh Heupel, how are you going to be going about attacking Ohio State?
I mean, I won't pretend to be an expert on him yet, but I started looking at him. I don't know every, you know, the tendency, every single opponent they faced, but and I know Tennessee has not done as much of it, but golly, man, if the situation is there, I got to think tempo would be something that you would want to lean on in this. Just, you know, I don't think they see it a lot. It really just seems, you know, again, not an Ohio State expert, and I know they've got some athletes on defense and all that, but I just, you know, I think the way Heupel can coach and think outside the box, I just, to me, you know, they seem so – vanilla is not the right word, but corporate for a football team maybe. I just think, you know, some of the stuff that Heupel does, man, I think can throw them off. And I think tempo is a could be a big factor. And, again, maybe they don't even need to go that way. Maybe Tennessee's defense dominates them and, you know, controls the clock, you know, controls everything. But if it's a close game, I really think tempo could be something that could throw them off.
I think that's a great point. You have teams in the Southeastern Conference that, you know, got punched in the mouth by a tempo in 2021. And I mean, it's still, you know, Tennessee still goes fast when it runs tempo and all that. It's still something hard to adjust to. But, you know, the teams in the league have seen it before now. Ohio State's never seen it, at least Tennessee's tempo. So, like, could it be the end-all, be-all? No, but I do think it could be a little factor if you want to lean on it, to Rob's point. I think, too, Brent, I mean, just be who you are, right? Who are you on offense? You're a running football team. You are at your best when you're running the football and then building off that with play action. I know Tennessee is one of the highest use of play action teams in America. All four of Nico's touchdowns at Vanderbilt came off play action. Lure that defense in that ranks eighth in the country at stopping the run, throw over the top. But all that starts with building off the run.
Yeah, and to Davey's question, too, about how do you attack Ohio State defensively, meaning how does Tim Banks attack Ohio State, or at least that's how I take it. I would say that you got to get them in third and long. You got to win early downs in the run game. Don't let their run game get going and get balanced so that they don't get play action with those wide receivers. Get them in third and longer situations and then heat the quarterback up. I mean, get after him. And I think that's being who you are. And I think what you're both, what you guys are saying both offensively and defensively, when you talk about this matchup, I don't think you have to do anything outside the box crazy. I just think you have to be you. And what you are is you win in the line of scrimmage on the defensive line, you know, defensively. You got to get after the quarterback. We see what happens when they can't get after the quarterback, the Georgia game. And then offensively, be you. Run the football. If Tennessee can't find some success running the football up there, then I think that's going to make for a long day, because I don't think you want it all on the quarterback and his core wide receiver's shoulders for 60 minutes. You got to be effective with Dylan Sampson, as they have been all year long.
My fault, Davey. I was looking at it from the other perspective. But either way, we hit you from both angles there.
We're good. We all covered.
Same.
Zuzify wants to know, who in the 2025 signing class has a chance to start game one against Syracuse, if you had to pick?
David Sanders.
Yeah, take Sanders out. Give me that one.
You take your first round draft pick plays. He's your first round draft pick, if you want to put it in NFL terms.
If you're taking him out, you know, I just don't know. That's a great question. I mean, start.
You probably hope nobody, don't you?
Yeah, correct. I mean, you know, you really don't want to start anybody. I agree with that.
Let's go to Ballsman 87. How much do current players actively recruit peers who are in the transfer portal? Would you think Nico has many relationships from the recruiting cycle in 7-on-7 days, and would at least reach out to some of those players?
I think they do in some ways. And as far as Nico's reach, I don't know. Again, it's what does Tennessee want, need, and all that.
Sam Smith, 2233. Rob wants to know about the Fighting Illini. Do you have a scout on him yet?
Starting to look at it, man. It's going to be really interesting because they're two of their best players are freshmen, and they've been really productive. And I'm going to be really – it'll be interesting to see, you know, how young kids handle what Tennessee is going to do to them defensively. One of them is a really athletic wing kid, Will Riley. He was a big-time recruit, the biggest recruit they signed there. And then their point guard, it's going to be fascinating, man. He's a 6'6 Euro kid. He's freshman. I'm going to go for it. Kasparis Jakonis, AP.
Yes!
He's really good. I mean, he's a legit NBA prospect, but he's 6'6". And so watching him and Zakai match up is going to be pretty fascinating. But, you know, so far this season, they have played really fast. They gave Bama – they lost 12 or 13, but that was a game in Birmingham. No shame in that. Lost their conference opener in overtime on the road at Northwestern. But they've got size, big – their leading scorer, rebounder, is a 7-foot, another Euro kid, Tomislav Ivsic. So Tennessee's going to be challenging the paint. I mean, they've got good size, and again, I'm going to be interested to see how the two freshmen, handle Tennessee's physicality on defense, especially. But that point guard matchup with Zakai and the 6'6 freshman is going to be something to watch.
Zadrunas Ilgauskas, Arvydas Sabonis, Drazen Petrovic, whoever you want to name, they're good players.
Cleveland 2854. What surprised you the most about this season regarding the Vols, and what surprised you the most regarding college football in general?
The parity. I think the parity is even more than I thought it would even be. Like the losses, Ole Miss losing to Kentucky at home. Tennessee at Arkansas, maybe a fraction, but not overall, just with Tennessee's road struggles, But Alabama losing at Vanderbilt and then getting bludgeoned at Oklahoma.
And then just lose that game. They got drilled.
Yeah, I mean, like, just some of the losses. Ohio State losing to Michigan, that Michigan team. The last few years, Michigan's been elite. This year, though, they were not. And to lose the way they lost at home, 3-touchdown favorite. I guess for me, it's just the parity across the board is probably the biggest surprise.
Yeah, I think for me with Tennessee, it's I thought they would be more explosive offensively. They've been good offensively. Don't get me wrong. But I didn't think that Dylan Sampson would be the bell cow that they would lean on the way they've leaned on him. I thought they would be more explosive in the passing game and SEC play. And I don't think it's a surprise, but to me this season is a reminder, Rob, of just – the challenge coaches have to get 17 to 22 year olds to play at a peak level every week. It's just really hard. And it seems to be really hard in this league with the depth that this conference has. You just can't take any weeks off. And when you do, it bites you in the rear end. And that's why the SEC has 3 in the playoffs instead of 4.
You can't be surprised by that. That's one of your. That's
no, I'm not surprised. I'm not. Surprised.
Say, that's what. That's one of your staples that you lean on. Getting 18-year-old.
Yeah. I mean, hard, I think 12 weeks. I think this season reminded us of that. I think that's what
100% in football commandments. For sure, I don't disagree with any of that. I guess I won't say I'm surprised by it, by the enthusiasm, all the the attention to the playoff, but you know it's probably been even a little bigger than I thought. Just what a big deal it is moving to 12 teams, the interest it's generating, and I think a big part of that is the same thing you're talking about, AP, the parity. I mean, if it was all cut and dry, and you're talking about just two or three teams, for the last month. You wouldn't have the same interest, but the parity, the way the losses are stacked up. Again, I thought the playoff would be a big deal, but it's a monster. I mean, more than I even thought, the way it's just dominated the last month.
Yeah, my surprise for college football in general has just been the kind of what Rob said. The engagement. I mean, we're all football fans, so whenever Tennessee's not playing, we're trying to watch football because we like football, but. Scoreboard watching for real in early October. I mean, that's what happened this year. I guess I was surprised at just how engaging and how much the regular season mattered with this 12-team playoff. I thought it was – I never thought the playoff was going to devalue the regular season, but I never thought it would be as good as it was.
Well, Issa, I mean, think about one of the most exciting days for Tennessee fans. They ho-hum cakewalk through a blowout of UTEP, and then the rest of the day is just – their hair's on fire, with the whole, Ole Miss, Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma.
Exactly.
That's the kind of stuff you're talking about.
And then for Tennessee, I thought the defense would be better. I did not think the defense would be this good. So that was at this point, it's not a surprise, but, midway through the season, it was still a surprise at how good this Tennessee defense was.
Now, as for VolQuest, the entity, least surprising, Eric spilling the coffee in the press box. Most surprising when Grant almost ran us off the road watching the Georgia Tech.
Yeah. Yep. Grant acts as dad on those trips, but dad doesn't text and drive or watch TV and drive. That's for sure. Whew.
Grant acts with two surprising things because he surprised us all with those rain jackets at the NC State game.
See, that's not surprising at all. That's just Grant.
I don't know. I was floored. My jaw was on the ground, and I think it's still in Charlotte.
We'll get one more before we hit a reset. Redbeard VFL. Do you think Tim Banks takes a head coaching job? If so, do you think they promote from within, or they try to get a bigger name outside of the program?
How bad does he want to be a head coach, Hubbard? Because I mean, I think he might get an opportunity, but it's going to be a job that probably pays him less than he makes now. How bad does he really want to be a head coach?
Yeah, it might pay him substantially less than what he would get for another deal at Tennessee. And I think Tennessee's trying to get another deal worked out with him. We'll see. If there were a change there, I don't know. I'm not sure what Josh Heupel would do. I don't know that William Inge is a promotion on this staff. Rodney Gardner's never wanted to be a coordinator. I don't think you're promoting a Willie Martinez. So I don't know exactly what Josh Heupel would do. For a defensive coordinator. We know it took him a long time to find a coordinator when he first got this job. Now, the job's more attractive now than it has been. But right now, I think the question is, where is Tim Banks in terms of how much does he covet a head coaching job? Alex Golish was going to take a job the year he left Tennessee. Now, he got a better job than I think a lot of us thought with South Florida. But he was taking a job because he was ready to be a head coach, and he was going to take one regardless. I don't know if Banks is in that situation or not.
All right, we got plenty more questions to get into, but first let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust. And that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
Hey, this is Travis Thompson, one of the new owners at North Lake Boat Store in La Follette, Tennessee. Love to have you come up and check out our Christmas sale. We have 50% off on all of our stuff in the pro shop. We carry Ranger, Starcraft. You can find us online at NorthLakeBoatStore.com or on Facebook at North Lake Boat Store. Happy holidays.
As always, our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions, you can contact them today for a free estimate at 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. NorthlakeBoatStore.com. All right, let's jump back into the questions. We'll go to Minnie. Do you all expect to see some major moves amongst major conferences and NCAA this offseason to try to rein in the chaos of transfer portal and name, image, and likeness?
What are you going to do? I mean, like, everybody coming together or the NCAA, and Congress getting involved, I mean, what can you do?
It's not going to – I mean, NCAA is not going to do it. Would you not agree? I mean, that's already – they passed that buck a long time ago, and it's not like the ACC not going to put a salary cap in, and then it's different than the SEC. I don't know what the answer is, but it's not getting fixed this offseason.
No chance.
Volunteer at 87, as it stands when the podcast is taped, how many healthy scholarship receivers will suit up in Columbus if nothing else happens between now and game time?
I mean, I think Thornton will play Hubber.
Do what now?
The biggest question would be Squirrel. I think Thornton will be fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think the question is, where is Squirrel White from an injury standpoint? But everybody's going to suit up. We'll see how many of them play and how many snaps they play them. But, I mean, Bruce should be fine with the hamstring. I think Dante's going to be fine. You got Squirrel, Mike Matthews.
You're taking everybody, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not a normal SEC game where you only take 70.
Right. So do you feel comfortable with playing Braylon Staley at all, and Nathan Laycock? Or do you play Ethan Davis some in the slot? You play two tight end stuff, which, quite frankly, has become a good bit of your base offense all year long, Eric, is that two tight end stuff. And I think you're comfortable in that setting, which can help you offset whatever loss you have at the wide receiver position.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think you are comfortable running 12. You've run 12 an awful lot. And having Ethan Davis being more comfortable out in the slot as kind of a bigger wide receiver, I think that'd be an easy fix. Now, do you want to live in that? Maybe not. But, I mean, that's something you can run a good portion of the time, in my opinion. I do have a question here, guys. This is from Eric_Kane. Say Squirrel is not going, or say Squirrel is beat up or whatever, or say Squirrel is playing and he's off for a series or whatever. What's Tennessee going to do with that slot?
I don't know. I mean, Mike Matthews practiced a few bit in there. Dante Thornton's played in there, but he was never comfortable in there. Brew, they moved into the slot on that one touchdown on senior day. I mean, can he roll inside and play it? Where are they with Braylon Staley at this point? Because he's not played really all year long outside of just those blowouts. I mean, it's a great question.
They've all, but off the top of my head, Mike Matthews, Brew, and Chris Brazzo have all moved down to the slot for a touchdown catch this year. I mean, they schemed it up for him. That's not playing the true slot. They just did it for that one play. The easy answer, I would say, is Dante Thornton, because he's done it before. But, I mean, I completely agree. He was never comfortable there. He never flourished there. Brew McCoy, would he make sense? I know he's never played the slot, but he's been here in the system for 3 years. He knows it. It's not like his skill set can't translate to the slot. Juwan Jennings played the slot when he was at Tennessee. That one kind of intrigues me. I would be interested to see if Brew McCoy would be a guy that can maybe bump inside.
I think you go tight ends and maybe Ethan Davis some, and you just till he needs to get a break or if he needs a blow, and then you adapt and go from there. I mean, when Squirrel got hurt in the Vanderbilt game, what'd they do? I mean, they didn't drop. I mean, I know Brew was out, but they didn't drop Brazzle into the slot. They didn't bring Staley in. They just schemed around it. And I think that would be the more comfortable thing for them, would be to scheme around it instead of moving personnel in there. Now they got 2 weeks, so I guess anything can happen, but I would think they would do more schematic stuff than they would personnel moves there.
I do think more 12 to what you said earlier makes a whole lot of sense, because they run it a good bit already. Nashville 615's got a couple. Do you think Tennessee staff should let portal guys play in the college football playoff? It definitely hurts our depth at certain spots. Austin, you've said this a couple of times. They're giving them the option to play, correct?
Yeah, they want them to play. They don't. I mean, you think they want Jalen Smith to not play or Chaz Nimrod to not play? They want them to play. The kids are choosing to not play if they like to play. And so, this is just kind of a flaw in the system, so to speak.
Another one from Nashville 615. Ohio State has great receivers. We've talked about that already. But is there anywhere else that on that team that really scares you guys when you're kind of looking at Ohio State? For me, I guess, I mean, they got two really good running backs. They're very productive. They run the football very well. The quarterback doesn't scare me, but he's got a lot of playmakers around him. I would say the two tailbacks, the run game.
If you believe what the numbers that were floated out there about, you know, what they put into the running back position, yeah, I mean, these are two guys they have a ton of money in, they believe in. Travion Henderson's been a starter since day one up there. Quinshon Judkins has, you know, been a force in the SEC and now is transformed into the Big Ten. So, yeah, I mean, Tennessee's going to have to be really good in their run lanes, ability to stop the run in this one.
Yeah, I mean, Rob, I think when you look at Ohio State, I mean, they have not played overly well, you know, at different points in the season in terms of offensive production. You know, Penn State, they had just a couple of drives. Nebraska had them on the ropes at one, you know, one point. But at the same time, too, I mean, I think you have to be careful as a fan, a Tennessee fan, that you're putting all of your stock in the Michigan game. And that's your whole analysis of Ohio State is the Michigan game, because they've been a lot better offensively than what they were that particular game. I'm not saying they're a juggernaut, but I know lasting impressions are lasting impressions, but that's as bad as, I mean, that's the worst they played all season long. What was the Michigan game?
Yeah, but I mean, the other one where everybody had a lot of eyeballs on them was Penn State, and they, you know, they won a tough game on the road, but they weren't exactly, you know, blowing up a team that you compare all these teams that play one another, but I don't think anybody was blown away by Penn State. And, you know, if they can score a touchdown in the red zone in their own, or not even the red zone, inside their own 5-yard line, you know, it changes the whole narrative of that season. So I mean, great skill on offense, but man, the quarterback, and again, I've not watched every minute of Ohio State play, but, you know, and seeing them in their big games, he doesn't scare you. I mean, they have great playmakers, but I go back to what Hubbard said earlier. If you can really heat him up, I mean, I think they could be pretty average pretty quick on offense.
I'll say this. We're at a stat roundup, you know, on the website for this week. And you look at Ohio State, it's one of the most efficient teams in the red zone, both offensively and defensively. Scoring touchdowns in the red zone, 77.5%. That's second among playoff teams. Keeping guys out of the end zone, you know, out of the end zone when they're in the red zone, 34.4% opponents are scoring touchdowns while in the red zone. That's easily number one in the defense, or number one in college playoffs, and Tennessee's number two in that regard. So Ohio State is a very, very efficient football team, both offensively and defensively, when you get inside the red zone. Let's go to Uberval. It says coaches and media are warning that coaches aren't going to want to play in conference title games like it's going to compromise the integrity of the game or the season, but what difference would it make? Are coaches going to forfeit at the title game, try to lose so they don't have to play in the title game? None of those scenarios seems realistic. So is this actually really an issue? I know Lane Kiffin's gone out there and said teams don't want to play in the title games, but the poster's correct. No coach is going to lose a football game, and you're not going to be allowed to forfeit a title game. So you're just kind of crying wolf, right?
Well, I mean, do you think the two ACC teams would like to have had last week off and get in the playoffs? Now, Clemson had to win and get in, so they wanted the game. But do you think SMU would have just soon stayed at the house last week and not gotten beat up in a Clemson game before they turn around and go play somewhere? Do you think Georgia liked playing last week? They lost their punter and their quarterback in that deal. I mean, those are the things coaches are talking about.
They're but the game's not ever going to go away. No, it makes way too much money.
There's too much money involved. They're not and nobody's going to forfeit the game. You know, I mean, it's a talking point because it's what's the benefit from a coaching standpoint? What's the benefit of the game? And I think that's the question coaches are asking themselves out there, because for coaches, that game, they look at it as it's only about money. The only reason you're playing that game is about money. And I think from that standpoint, that's where this narrative comes from. I mean, the coach from SMU, Rhett Lashley, said it best on Andy Staples' podcast. He's like, yeah, I mean, we're going to go play because that's what you're supposed to do. But if we all came down with COVID, we're in the playoff by not playing the conference championship game. And that's a very valid, very fair point. And I think those are the things that coaches are going to hang on and try to keep that discussion going.
Next question is over under 17,000 Vol fans in attendance in Columbus. Yeah, I don't see it getting that high. Certainly it's going to be more than the 35 allotted tickets, but I don't think it's going to grow to – would you say 10?
I wouldn't, but maybe I don't have a read on how disgusted they are with Ryan Day.
Yeah, I mean,
I would say somewhere closer to 10.
Yeah, I would take the under. I would say it's somewhere probably between 7 and 10 ultimately. I mean, Tennessee fans are going to try to get tickets. How many are going to be realistically available? How much are you willing to pay? Remember, most road games in the SEC, the allotment's 5. That's the school allotment is 5. And you have a handful of people buy, you know, tickets online somewhere. But, you know, I think if you were somehow able to get 10 there, that'd be a pretty impressive showing.
Well, and how many people are balancing against hoping to go to California next, you know, for the next round? That's something we've never dealt with before in the postseason.
Yeah.
Look at Oregon's path. I mean, they were in Indianapolis last week. They're off this week. They fly to Pasadena the next week. If they win, they go to Dallas. If they win that, they go to Atlanta. That's a lot of money to go watch a football team play. A lot.
And meanwhile, Texas was in Atlanta, then at home, then Atlanta again if they win. Then back to Dallas.
Yeah, but at least for Dallas, they can drive. Oregon doesn't have every game that they're involved in, going to potentially be involved in since last week's championship game is a flight, not a cheap flight.
If Texas makes the title game, they'll be in Atlanta 3 times in like 6 weeks or whatever. Hope you bought a VRBO for the first part of the year.
All right, we'll go to Volman 98. Who has the best chance to start on the offensive line next year, not including Hurd? I know you spoke about David Sanders earlier, but Brent Austin, William Satterwhite, who are some other guys that you think can start?
I think it's too early to tell. You know, I can sit up here and tell you Satterwhite's got an inside track on center, but then when they went to the behind Cooper a few games ago, they put somebody else at center. So I mean,
that was a preserver redshirt though, right?
Yeah, probably, but still.
I mean, that was a UTEP game. You still had the Vanderbilt game. He had already played in 3. I mean, that to me, that just looked like straight, like, well, we're going to redshirt him, so just put in Max Anderson.
Yeah. I think it's just too early to know, too early to tell. I mean, you could say maybe Jesse Perry slides inside. You know, what happens with Shamu Umarov? You know.
How many do they go get out of the portal?
Yep.
Do they go get 2 out of the portal to – be plug and play guys on the inside, or are you going to look at some guys? You think you have some guys ready here who have been developing for the last year or two? That's the storyline coming out of this season. Whenever the portal life is over and you get ready for spring practice.
Yep.
Doolittle Vol wants to know, by 2026, will we see a 16-team playoff? No buys. 5 conference champions are guaranteed a spot, but not guaranteed a certain seed. All first round games remain on campuses. This seems like the most the best option to me.
Yes, I do believe that you will see an increase to 16 by 2026.
I can't. I mean, what do you guys think? I can't believe they're so short-sighted about this whole bye thing. I mean, that nobody sniffed out how problematic it was going to be?
Well, they didn't think that the NCAA didn't think NIL was going to be problematic. I mean,
that's a fair point, but it's not perfect at all, but the buys are just ridiculous.
I would say in normal years, Brent, I mean, one would assume that at least 3 of the 4, of the automatics, would come from the power conferences. This year was just kind of weird, right? I mean, SMU doesn't, you know, stub their toe there at the end. They're getting a buy, right? So, I mean, it's just kind of one of those weird years. But, I mean, the majority of the time, 3 of the 4 at least – if not 4, the 4 should come from the Power 4, but obviously this first year was not the case.
They should always come from the Power 4, always. Yeah. I mean, maybe not always. Maybe when you have an outlier, but I mean, make it a meritocracy.
Yeah, I think that the committee was so concerned about everybody talking Big Ten SEC bias because they were all going to be the top seeds and the buys were going to come out of there. You weren't rewarding the other leagues. And you thought, well, it'll be okay. And nobody realized the Big 12 was going to be, you know, the chaos that it was with, you know, those teams, strength of schedule, not very good, you know, not elite there. And then Boise, I mean, I don't think anybody sat in that meeting and went, well, the Group of 5, man, they got a great shot at having a bye every year. I mean, nobody sees it that way. I think they were more obsessed with, we cannot allow the nation, the country to scream Big Ten SEC bias by those schools getting multiple buys in their league that they went this route. And I think it's bit them in the rear end. And I think they'll adjust quickly to it. And they should.
Athron's got a couple. First one, if there is to be any staff movement this year, do you think it's good or bad for Tennessee as they are in the playoffs? And we all hope that they have four more games to play, so they would be further behind the eight ball at that point with who will still be available. Assistant coaching carousel is pretty late. Look at how late Tennessee had two changes on their staff last year, right? I mean, I was on my way back from baseball, right? That was mid-February when Tennessee had that. So I don't think this is as pressing as a head coaching carousel, correct?
No, and yeah, I mean, it's not as pressing. I think the other thing too, Austin, is that there's a lot more discussions that go on behind the scenes about, hey, if this comes open, would you be interested here? Or, hey, I think this is going to happen here. Talk to your agent. Would you be interested in this job and that and the other? I mean, there's a lot of that never gets told and never gets seen. Why? Because they're not going on Twitter going, hey, I'm in the transfer portal as an assistant coach, and here are the 12 teams I'm interested in. I mean, there's so much more stuff that takes place that nobody ever knows those discussions ever happen. I don't think it's a big deal from a timing standpoint.
I agree. You hear the net, the nail on the head. I love it. I bring it a little salty.
No, I'm good. I'm just saying.
I know, but you're explaining the same thing I explained earlier when I get on my little high horse about like not looking at the stars, looking at production. Like a bunch of this stuff happens behind the scenes that no one ever sees the light of day on it. They don't need to see the light of day on it. You know, I mean, nobody needs to know that, you know, three coaches almost left because they almost got poached away, and then those coaches decided to stay because they were loyal to Josh Heupel.
Do you think the noise in Columbus, it has been rumored that it can't hold sound like SEC stadiums do, or the temperature will play a big factor against Ohio State? It has to be the noise, right, since it will technically be colder in Knoxville when they leave.
It will be loud in Columbus. It will be loud in Columbus. Now, is it going to be Death Valley on a Saturday night? I mean, I don't think so. I don't know, though. I've never been to a game. We talked about that on the Tuesday podcast. You just don't know like what it's going to be like, but it's going to be loud. And, you know, Andre's comments from my question, which was not intended for him to say that Arkansas at night was louder than the Shoe, you know, will get them a little bit louder. But how much louder can they really get, right? Like, I mean, it's going to be loud. It won't be any louder than anything Tennessee's ever played in. So just about going out there and executing. You have to not fall start and give yourself first and 15. You can't let the noise affect you when you're about to catch a football. Just go out and make plays.
What are the chances Andre Turrentine makes the Jumbotron pregame in Columbus, Ohio, and not as a part of the starting lineups?
1,000%.
That quote is everywhere, or part of that quote is everywhere in Columbus, Ohio today.
Yeah. He tried to self-correct. My thing was, is like, he looks over at the sports information director and smiles like, okay, I've been, you prepped me for this question. And then he goes up there and says, Arkansas at night, South Carolina at night. I'm almost like, okay.
Crayon's got a couple of questions. How underrated is the strength and conditioning staff? Seems like we have had very minimal season-ending injuries this year. We look as fresh in the fourth quarter nearly every position group as we do at kickoff. Really impressed with what they have done this year, strength and conditioning staff.
I think they've been really good since Josh Heupel got here. I think Kurt's done a really nice job. People get injured in football, but on the whole, I mean, I think the team looks drastically different than, you know, when they arrived.
Yeah, Rob, I do the spot sheets every week and get them. And one of the things I do to find out, make sure I've got everybody's names, because nobody wants to produce a two deep anymore, is you go through PFF and you look at the snap counts and you look at the number of players that guys are playing. Part of the reason why this defense has been as fresh as it's been in the fourth quarter, they're playing more defensive bodies than anybody else in the country is playing at all three levels. I mean, there are a lot of games you go through and you say, well, that defense played 17, 18, maybe 19 guys. And you look at Tennessee's defense and they played 13 on the defensive front. And that doesn't, you know, and that doesn't count the rotation in the secondary and their rotation at linebacker. I mean, the strength staff's done a really good job. Tennessee's commitment to playing a bunch more bodies has benefited them as well.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that. I was just going to say that, you know, being on the field less, just exactly like you're talking about. I mean, and also how, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, but I bet when you're tired, when you're fatigued late, I bet you are more likely to get yourself in a position where you do get injured. where you just, you know, you don't get somewhere, you know, get somewhere a split second late.
Your technique becomes lazy.
Eric, you were an elite college football player. Am I right or wrong? I mean,
elite is the correct word.
You get tired. You get tired. You put yourself in physical positions where the strain might, you know, pop that ankle that wouldn't have happened in the first quarter.
100%. You get tired. You get lazy with your technique. You have more injuries. Just like in football, if you don't go 100%, it's when you get hurt because someone else is.
By the way, I've got a question. This is from Austin_Price. On Wednesday, Ohio State Representative Josh Williams introduced the Ohio Sportsmanship Act Tuesday. The act would make it a felony offense to plant a flag in the center of Ohio Stadium. How data is this? Because, my God, a felony. I mean, do you realize, like, these are college kids? Like, planting a flag. He's not actually planting a flag. He's just kind of pushing it against the hard surface. Like, how many kids are not even going to know that exists and then just do something because that's what kids do, and they're going to try to, like, give them a felony? I mean, like, that's terrible, right? Am I wrong?
That is so embarrassing.
Well, you had the Georgia guy want to introduce removing Texas from the SEC. The Georgia's Congress, the Georgia's legislative guy. I'm like, stay in your lane, right? I mean, just –
stay in your lane.
Move on.
It's like the opposite of shut up and dribble, right? I mean, it's like, goodness gracious. All I know is they got their butts whipped in the game and their butts whipped in the fight. So, another one here from Crayon. Will teams who win the quarter and semifinal games be credited as those bowl winners? So Tennessee or whoever could be like
they could be multiple bowl winners. They could be the Rose Bowl champs, the Cotton Bowl champs, and the national champs if they ran the tape.
Percentage chance the entertainment district becomes to fruition.
Got to figure out the parking garage and the parking situation before you move forward in that deal. I think that's the biggest challenge right now. Certainly, that's what they want to do. I think financially, they can make that work with, you know, kind of what they're doing with the dorm construction and everything. I think the biggest challenge right now is the removal of the G10 garage. How do you survive that deal from a game day experience in football and basketball and all the other events that take place in the arena with concerts, student parking and all those types of things? I think that's what everybody's trying to figure out right now before that thing takes the next real step forward beyond the design phase.
What contract is Danny White working with? Surely he gets some sort of extension.
Guy's got the best contract in college athletics.
Rolls over every year.
I mean, it rolls over every year. He's in a guaranteed 5-year contract. He gets a 5% raise regardless of how his programs do every year. He can make up to $600,000 in bonus money, which is set up to where they're going to have to fall off the map athletically not to make the $600,000 bonus. He's going to make $3.3 million, I think, this year, something like that. And then it'll go up another $250,000 next year. I think next year, assuming he hits the $600,000 mark, he'll make $3.5 million. He's doing okay.
The only guy that has a better contract than that is Matt Ray.
That's right.
But also, would you worth noting, baseball national championship, ranked number one in basketball right now, and going to the college football playoff?
Oh, not saying the guy.
I know you're not, Hubbard. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying every AD in the country would love to have a 5-year, an automatic rollover in their deal with a guaranteed raise every year.
So you're saying the best contracts are Danny White, Matt Ray, and then Mark Stoops, right, at Kentucky?
Yes,
he's poor got a
Mark,
very
poor Mark very... Stoops. But poor is anybody more miserable making that guaranteed money than poor Mark Stoops?
I know. All right, we'll get just a couple more. Last one here from Crayon. Who handles travel logistics for the CFP? Is it the host school? It's the college football playoff, right? They handle everything.
They provide the financing for it. I mean, but Tennessee handles, every team handles their own travel. That's why Tennessee went and did site survey, you know, to find out where the hotel is. Now, the college football playoff handles what hotel you're going to stay in and all those things. But, I mean, each individual school goes, all right, here's the site survey. Here's where we're going to have meeting rooms. Here's what we're going to do. You know, we're going to charter the plane. How many planes are we going to charter and all those types of things. Those are handled, you know, with each individual team, ultimately, is how that boils down to.
Will Tennessee coaches speak with Brian John Marie about how Michigan was able to stifle the OSU offense?
Yeah, I mean, you know, BJ and Tim Banks are still extremely close, so I would be stunned if that conversation hasn't already happened. It probably happened before this game was ever even locked in, just to go ahead and start pre-scouting. You heard Ryan Day talk about how we've been looking at several teams. Tennessee had to. I mean, that's just what you have to do to kind of go ahead and get a jump on things.
How do you think revenue sharing will change how collectives and universities operate with current high school recruits and transfer portal craziness?
To me, Austin, this is the million-dollar question. Because when you've got revenue share, let's say it's $22 million, and let's say you earmark $15 million of that $22 million to football. Okay. How much more is your NIL budget on top of that $15 million? Right? Are you going to put $5 million into it? Are you going to take the $20 million some schools are spending now through NIL and add rev share on top of it? So now your football budget becomes $35 million. What's going to happen there? And that's why there's so many people out there going, there needs to be some kind of guardrails put into this deal. Because is somebody going to take out of that $22 million? How much of it are they going to earmark for other sports? Is it going to be 18 for football, 15 for football, 12 for football? How are you going to budget that out? We'll see. I mean, it just depends on what everybody wants to do right now.
And is the $15 million the pay for play? And then after that, is it, hey, Spire's got to go out and get, Food City to do a deal with Squirrel White? And,
is it real deals?
Is it real deals? Because, right. I mean, at this point, like all these collectives have just been pay for play outside of some. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are the Beats deal. There is, the local car dealer deal. All that stuff's real. So it's not like it's just straight pay for play, but a lot of the money is just, get a big, pile and divvy it up and all that.
Well, and how many current players who have deals are thinking, I'm getting a raise when redshirt?
Yeah, I'm going to double up. They're all thinking that.
Yeah.
I think they're in for a rude awakening because I think a lot of these schools are like, nah, because the money that we're going to use the $15 million for redshirt is still coming from the six donors that,
The word no is the hardest word to learn in college athletics. The hardest word to learn is the word no. But it's going to happen. Guys are going to have to learn that word.
All right. Appreciate you guys for sending in your questions as we do it each and every Thursday with the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. Big thanks as always to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being a presenting sponsor of the show. They've been local and trusted since 1999. For a free estimate, you can pick up the phone today and dial 865-524-5888 or visit them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. For Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, Rob Lewis, I'm Eric Kane. Thank you so much for joining us here on the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.